All right, thank you. Good evening.
Good evening.
I said good evening.
Good evening.
Outstanding. I'm very humbled to have been invited out here to Swarthmore. I'm still on the wait list as an undergrad here, so I'm very thankful. So I had to go to Penn State, right? So I'm very thankful to have been invited. I want to thank Ms. Singh and then the committee for inviting me. It's a very important topic that we've been invited here to discuss. Now, I was told that I could talk for 90 minutes. Is that good? No? I was actually told that the keynote could be for 45 minutes. And I think instead of that, we had a very lively discussion upstairs from the panelists that you're going to hear from. And I think it's much more important and much greater value for you to hear from all of them equally, and for us, most importantly, to hear from you and to have a discussion with you about this terrible condition of ours in America. It's called gun violence. And so I'm very thankful to be here. As you heard, I am not the smartest tool in the shed. I didn't get accepted to Swarthmore, right? I failed Algebra 2 at Central High School. After I graduated from high school, I went on to the United States Military Academy at West Point. I was there for 197 days. I received a medical discharge. They found out I was allergic to math and chemistry. So I say, I'm not the smartest person, but I grew up in Philadelphia and I love Philadelphia. And I knew there's just way too much violence. I became an assistant district attorney in 1992. And I prosecuted cases every day in court. And I love trying cases. I love being a champion for victims. I never knew before I went to law school that I was going to be an assistant district attorney. I was a public interest law scholar at Georgetown. So I knew I was committed to public service. I'd been the president of the student government at Penn State. I led a 102-mile march from Penn State to Harrisburg when I was a sophomore to get our school to divest from South Africa. And so I was committed to public interest law. You're shaking your heads. And yes, in 2016, everybody looks back and says that apartheid was wrong, that Nelson Mandela is a hero and a saint. But back in 1987, when I had long curly hair, I looked like the lost DeBarge brother. Most Penn Staters, which is a much more conservative college and campus than Swarthmore, most Penn Staters thought that, hey, why are you going to give up spring break when we're going to Cancun? Why are you marching to Harrisburg? What goes in South Africa is their business. And Nelson Mandela should be in prison because he's a communist. He wanted to destroy the government. So I'm very proud of that. But I say that to say that I went to law school, I wasn't sure what I wanted to be. And I had a third year, I had a clinic in my third year, and a professor said, Seth, as a young black man, you should go back to Philadelphia and be a public defender because you understand the criminal mind. So I had to think about that. He didn't mean me any harm. It was like Archie Bunker giving Lionel Jefferson career advice on TV. But I knew I wanted to go back to Philadelphia and become an assistant district attorney. Because I thought the assistant district attorney had the power to approve crimes and charges, but also to decline them, to decide who had a search warrant approved for their home, who had one declined, and that I was going to really bring the Constitution to life as an assistant district attorney. And so I really have enjoyed my experience of working with the police. We have several of them here, Chief Chitwood over there, an American hero. And so I'm very thankful to be here. But again, I wasn't driven to become a criminologist. I think in many ways, I'm an amateur criminologist now. People say that I'm the DS. No, really, I just play a lawyer on TV now. I'm like the DA on Law and Order. But I became interested in solutions only because I got married in 1996. My wife at that time, who I met her, she already had a daughter. So I became a stepdad. I had to buy a house. I wanted to remain an assistant DA. So I started teaching at Penn State Abington. And I was teaching a criminology class. And so that I could be one step ahead of the students, who were probably smarter than me, I had to read everything that was in the textbook. And that's where I really first started learning about criminology. And an entire branch of criminology known as the ecology of crime. There are patterns of crime based on time, temperature, season. We have more gun violence in Philadelphia when? Does anybody know? Right. Why is that? It's hot. People are outside. People are upset. We had six homicides last Wednesday in Philadelphia. It was the hottest day of the year. It was the first day it was warm. And as my mother would say, people just acted the fool.
Yeah.
I got an amen from over here. So we can do things to change violence by environmental design. So I started learning these things only as a professor, not because of day in and day out I was trying cases. But I'm very thankful. I ran for district attorney in 2005 against my predecessor. And I only raised $150,000. She raised and spent $1.3 million calling me everything but the son of God. But I ran on a platform of geographic-based prosecution, of using empirical data, working with the police and communities to prevent crime. I believe the new paradigm of what it means to be an American prosecutor is that my job, number one, is public safety, which is preventing crime and reducing recidivism, the rate of people that commit crimes over and over and over again. The old paradigm, any question posed to my predecessor, the answer would have been from her mouth, more jails, more prison time. So don't get me wrong, the right people deserve to be in prison. The right people deserve to be in prison maybe for a long time. But I believe more important is trying to prevent crime. And so I could talk to you all day about reducing and preventing crime and my thoughts, but we're here really to talk about gun violence. In Philadelphia, we've had 54 homicides so far year to date, compared to 52 last year. We were actually lower than last year until last Wednesday when we had six. Every year in Philadelphia, about 83 to 85% of our homicides are caused by handguns. We have one of the highest rates of homicide caused by handgun. Every day my morning begins, I receive an update of the violent crimes and of gun violence and the homicide rate. It's the first thing I look at every day. Now, how many of you would say, what is the number one reason we have the gun violence? Who's shooting who? What would you think? Anyone? Anyone? Bueller? Yes, ma'am. What's that?
Unfortunately, young African-Americans.
Well, that's true. In Philadelphia, we have a disproportionate number of, and people say Black Lives Matter, and I agree 100%, but all lives matter. But we often forget that people shooting each other are young black and brown men in Philadelphia. But 81% of the people that kill white people are who? White people. So often we get caught up, and racism in many ways is an underlying tone in all conversations about criminal justice in America. That's for a whole nother day, possibly. But I'm going to come back to that because I think we don't have the political will to end the gun violence, maybe, because of the people being shot. So we're going to get to that. But in Philadelphia, we have 54 homicides so far this year. We used to have about 500 homicides in Philadelphia every year. But my question was, who's committing these? And so we would generally think, when you hear that number, that it's nothing but drug dealers shooting each other. Like a bad Steven Seagal movie, a truck shows up with drugs in it, and there's a shootout at the warehouse. Or some kids are out on a corner, and there's a shootout. Now, frequently there are shootouts on corners between drug dealers. But the number one reason for the homicides in Philadelphia, and I'll let Chief Chitwood speak for himself, and the major here from Chester might have different facts. But the number one cause for these homicides is an argument. Now, yes, often they are young men who are co-conspirators or in confederations of knuckleheads and hooligans and little gangs in Philadelphia that often are selling drugs. But the reason why the homicide was committed generally has nothing to do with the drug sales. Is that these guys don't have healthy conflict resolution skills. And they shoot each other over arguments over very, very basic things. Someone said something about the Sixers. Someone said something about someone's girlfriend. Someone fouled someone too hard at the basketball court. Someone stepped on someone's new Tims or sneaks. There's an argument, everything at the macro level, right, between countries, and on the micro level, someone felt disrespected. At the macro level, it leads to a war. The micro level, someone pulls out a gun, where they might have shot, they might have just punched someone a couple generations ago. But because of the availability of handguns, they just go and get it and shoot somebody. So at the heart of the conflict is something that's written in this book. Anybody know what this is? The Constitution. Where is the conflict here that this tension arises today? Anyone? All right, this woman's smiling. I want her, in her most theatrical voice, to read for us the Second Amendment.
The right to bear arms.
Real loud, theatrical.
A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
All right, so what do you think that means? Anyone? What does it mean to you? What do you think it means?
That in order to facilitate a well-regulated military, there needs to be access to arms in order to facilitate the well-regulated militia.
Okay. Anyone else? I went to a Quaker school as a child, so I like consensus. Anyone else? Any other thoughts? All right, you have to take a cultural and historical perspective of when the Bill of Rights was written. Our Constitution, the Bill of Rights, was written, and the entire Bill of Rights is our reaction to how the Redcoats, how the British treated us. You have the right to a speedy trial because the British would just arrest you. You remain in the stockade for maybe 4 or 5 years, then find out what you were charged with, and then maybe have a trial. And it's almost impossible to determine who could be your witnesses against the crown for having stolen an apple 4 years ago at Third Market. So each one of our Bill of Rights really is a reaction to us wanting to protect the individual against the crown. So really, the Second Amendment, in my humble opinion and many other folks, really is for the state. Right, we were a confederation of states, to be able to regulate a militia for each state. I'm a member now of the Pennsylvania Army National Guard, which really is the militia for Pennsylvania. For there to be a well-regulated militia to protect the state from the federal government or from some invading army. Not for me just to be able to have unfettered access to as many handguns as possible. Anything really more than two handguns in your house isn't a handgun, right? So for us not to have unfettered or unregulated access individually, but for the state, that's the primary issue. I would also say, and more cynically, the real reason why we have a problem is because of the lobbying manufacturing, the manufacturing lobby of those that sell handguns. I would almost say it's a billion-dollar industry. I know it's probably not that high, but it could probably very well be close to that in America. And they're a very, very powerful lobby in every state capital and in the national capital. But what I believe, we have to look at the empirical data. Right? I said I became an amateur criminologist from teaching at Penn State. And what I see when we look at who's being shot in Philadelphia, who's committing the offenses, we can draw a Venn diagram. The Pew Charitable Trust did a study called Murder is No Mystery. And we can do a Venn diagram. Remember Venn diagrams from eighth grade science class? I could draw a circle of those most likely to be shot in Philadelphia. I can superimpose that with another circle of those most likely to do the shooting. The intersection and the union of those two is about 85%. So we can pretty much identify those most likely to be shot and to do the shooting. Again, I would say a cynic might think we don't have the political will. There was one weekend since I was the DA where we had 30 shootings in Philadelphia. 8 of them were homicides. All of them were young black and brown men. So I'd venture to say that had they all 30 been visiting us from Scandinavia, staying at the Four Seasons Hotel, Nancy Grace, CNN, they would all still be in Philadelphia. What is the problem with Philadelphia? But this barely made page 8 in the Daily News. New York City had the political will to reduce gun violence. And some of my esteemed panelists will talk to you a little bit about the theory of making gun violence a public health issue, right? Not just a criminal law issue. I believe we have to have a holistic solution, right? Not just the criminal laws, but how do we handle it? I go and talk to kids in third grade, fourth grade. I go to elementary schools twice, three times a week, talking about bullying. Because really, talking about conflict resolution. But treating it like they did in New York. They used to have in New York close to 2,400 homicides a year. And there also about 85% of them were committed with handguns. But they had the political will in New York City, New York State, to reduce the gun violence in New York City. Across the board, not just with criminal law, but criminal law was very important. So one thing that they did, and I tell people, in Philadelphia, we haven't had one homicide in the city of Philadelphia in the last 3 years by a person carrying one of these. Does anybody know what that is? It's a license to carry a firearm. I have a license to carry a firearm. I don't carry a firearm. I have a license to ride a motorcycle. I don't own a motorcycle. I like people with licenses. Right? But if I tell you not one person in Philadelphia that's been charged with shooting and killing someone had a license, what does that tell you? These are people that possessed and got the guns illegally. So I want to use just empirical data, not just the emotion. So yes, we need to reduce the trafficking of handguns. So we're prosecuting people for being straw purchasers. Does anybody know what a straw purchaser is? Anyone other than a panelist? Anyone other than anyone other than an alum? Yes, in the back, young lady.
Oh, hi. Someone who, I think.
Yes?
Someone who goes to a state where they have kind of lenient laws on how many guns you purchase at a time, or if you don't need to possess a gun, you should to purchase like more than one gun at a time, and then taking those guns, going back to states with kind of maybe hefty laws for gun ownership.
Cool. That's a gun dealer. That's a person who's like just going and getting lots of, a straw purchaser. Generally, yes, sir?
Is it a person who buys a gun legally for another person?
Exactly. Generally, it's the criminal's girlfriend, right? He'll send her in. She'll buy a couple guns because she doesn't have a background. She doesn't have a criminal history. She then gives it or sells it to, you know, her boyfriend, and his criminal enterprise uses it to hurt people. So by prosecuting and going after those people, that's one thing that we're doing. But also we're using empirical data. So in Philadelphia, I tell people, as an undergrad, plagiarism is a bad thing, right? Your teachers tell you that? As a DA, plagiarism is a great thing. My goal is to try to find best practices anywhere and to see if we can replicate them in Philadelphia. So you're going to hear, in Chicago, they had violence interrupters. We get people that have street cred to work with law enforcement, to go out and talk and hear what are people saying? Who has the beef? Who's upset with whom? So then maybe we can try to prevent that by having imposing healthy conflict resolution. I stole from Professor David Kennedy, who is a professor at the John Jay School of Criminology in New York, the idea we call in Philadelphia focused deterrence. So again, we use criminal mapping in Philadelphia. I have a monthly gun stat meeting for my chiefs of geographic areas where we talk about all of the gun cases where people possess them illegally. That's a violation of the Uniform Firearms Act. All the non-fatal shootings, all the gunpoint robberies. And we can show you on the map all the safe places. 95% of Philadelphia is very, very safe, but there's hot spots everywhere where the crimes occur. So we're trying to use that science, but we've identified a very small neighborhood in South Philadelphia. There's about 12 gangs that commit all the violence. We invite those individuals in, representatives of them, three or four at a time, of each of the 12 groups. We also have close to 40 people in a room. They're invited, they're on probation or parole, so they have to come in. And we let them know there's a new game in town. How many of you ever watched the TV show The Wire on HBO? Remember there was an episode called New Hamsterdam. And what did the police, it was a major, what did the police major of that area do? He brought the drug dealers together and said, look, I'm going to let you sell all the drugs you want in this four-block area. But you can't shoot anybody. If anybody commits a crime with a gun, I'm shutting the whole thing down. So I saw that, and I read David Kennedy's book. But we're not allowing people to sell drugs. Well, I want you to repeat that. I know I'm on TV. I'll be YouTube. I'm not saying that. Drugs are bad. I'm not saying that. What we're saying is when we bring them in and we tell them, if anyone in your crew, if anyone in your gang commits a crime with a gun, we're going to hold your entire crew responsible. So how can you do that? Well, all of you are on active probation or parole. So if Pookie commits a crime with a gun, and you are supposed to be on monthly urinalysis, we're going to make it weekly. If you're, so whatever they each have, and that makes them do what? It's like a positive peer pressure. They say, whoa, look, don't do anything with a gun, because that's going to bring heat on us. And we have nothing to do with your beef with that guy. Right? When you were kids, you went to visit your grandma, and you had your cousins were there, and grandma said, all of you have to do this, or you can't go see the fireworks. So you made sure that your other cousin, who was kind of like the slouch, made sure he did everything right, so you could all go see the fireworks. It's the same concept. So we're trying to use empirical data. We're trying to use new solutions. But again, you have to have the political will. So in New York City, in Albany, they passed a law that if you possess a gun without a license, you're going to go to jail for 3.5 years. Now, for the most part, I'm opposed to mandatory sentences, right? But for the right ones, and I think people who carry guns illegally are the people that are willing to kill my Aunt Shirley, my favorite aunt, kill one of my three daughters, or anybody that's in this room. And so what they did in New York, they instituted that and did other things, and their homicide rate went from about 2,500 a year. Last year, they had less homicides in New York City, a city of 8 million people, than we did in Philadelphia, of 1.5 million people. And we had around 280 or so in Philadelphia last year. They had the political will to reduce the gun violence, and we can do the same. So I'm very glad this is political engagement. I hope all of you remain engaged. I hope all of you try to learn as much as possible, whatever your majors are, but always remain committed to social justice, trying to help out your fellow man and woman. So I could talk to you all day, all week about solutions and ideas about reducing gun violence, but from just hearing upstairs my panel, my fellow panelists, many of them are much smarter than I am. I want you to hear from them and for us to have a great discussion together. All right? But again, thank you, Ms. Singh.